Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Public education reforms know no boundaries. They apply to the affluent and the poor, rural and urban residents, English speakers, and those learning to speak English alike, with disparate effects. How are student populations affected by reforms coming out of Santa Fe, whether by rule or legislation? What factors determine whether or how reforms affect students differently? And how do current proposed reforms affect you? Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues is Edward Tabat Cubero, Deputy Director of Dual Language Education of New Mexico. Also joining me is Powake Valley School Superintendent Adan Delgado, who joins us by telephone. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Edward Tabat Cubero, tell us about your organization, Dual Language Education of New Mexico, and your role with that organization, please.
Sure. Dual Language Education of New Mexico is a 501c3 nonprofit based here out of Albuquerque. It was founded actually by educators back in the mid-90s. The state had received some federal grants to begin implementing what is kind of our current iteration of dual language programs at six schools across the state. And teachers and principals from those six schools started to get together once a year. They met in 1996, I think, for the first time at in the library at Dolores Gonzalez Elementary down by the zoo here in Albuquerque. And that has evolved into what's become the nation's largest dual language conference, La Cosecha. We host that every other year between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. And we had about over 2,000 participants this past year. We provide technical assistance support to school districts now, not only in New Mexico, but around the country, around dual language programming and instruction.
What opportunities have you had to study or become aware of education reform policies and initiatives in New Mexico and across the country?
Sure. So, you know, in order to do the work that we do in dual language programming and dual language instruction, you have to have the right political context within which to do that work. And we know that language is an issue that's been highly politicized. It was politicized in the state of New Mexico as we were trying to get statehood. There was a huge issue in the New Mexico territory between Arizona, who wanted an English-only state at that time and was concerned about New Mexico and the amount of Spanish and indigenous language use here in our state. And it's continued to be that. So we've had to become very involved in advocacy and school reform. So we've had a chance to see some of the reforms we're seeing here in New Mexico play out in the different states that we support around the country as well.
Adan Delgado, welcome to you, and thanks for joining us from Powake. And you are currently the superintendent of Powake Valley Schools. Tell us a bit about the makeup of your district, please.
Our district, we serve about 2,000 students up a little bit north of Santa Fe. We serve six of the Northern Rio Grande pueblos in our district. Four reside within our district, and two we have significant membership from other pueblos. We've also seen an increase in other Native American students from all over the country lately. We're about 75% Hispanic makeup, about 15 to 20% Native American, and the rest are from other ethnicities. So that's the essential makeup of our district.
What other experience have you had in the education field prior to becoming superintendent of Powake Valley Schools, please?
I've spent a lot of time working with schools, especially in northern New Mexico, including some experience working with the Navajo Reservation. At one time had a school that was 100% made up by Navajo students, very high poverty, very rural and isolated. So, you know, about 10 years as a superintendent now working with schools all over northern New Mexico. I also do some work in a mentorship program where I work with a school in APS, a school in the South Valley that is has a very heavy minority and low-income demographic.
Well, now that we know a bit about both of you, I'm going to read something to y'all, and this particular language is from the Foundation for Excellence in Education website. But this was information that was disseminated widely last year, and I believe was in the governor's State of the State address in 2014. And it says, results from New Mexico's 2013 standards-based assessment showed that the state has reversed a three-year trend of declining reading scores in third grade. Hispanic, African American, and Native American students made significantly higher gains than their white counterparts, and English language learners increased their scores by nearly three times more than non-English language learner third graders. In high school, New Mexico's 11th grade class increased proficiency rates by reading by nearly 10 percentage points, and these learning gains build on last year's achievements. As a class, this year's 11th graders have increased their reading proficiency rate by more than 20% and math proficiency rate by 12.7%. And once again, we see Hispanic, African American, and Native American students making notably greater proficiency gains than their white counterparts. And again, that's language that was widely disseminated in the middle of 2013 and 2014. So let me start with you, Adan Delgado. Is that what happened in the state? Did we see that level of advancement, and why did it happen?
Well, I think that part of what I'm hearing there is the kind of thing that we're seeing in our schools. The focus of my work especially the past couple of years, has been around the area of school turnaround. And as we look at the aspects of school turnaround, the things that we have seen work in other schools, especially other schools that serve similar demographics, we know the kinds of things that we can focus on that will give us those gains. I think the thing to remember is that because of the achievement gap that is present, we need to see those kinds of gains just to even approach any kind of a parity between our minority students and non-minority students. So, I mean, we can't forget that even if we cite increases or gains of, 10 to 20%, those are gains on very low proficiency rates that currently exist. So, for example, we may have a school that is, I've worked with schools with zero proficiency in their school. They have zero students who are proficient in math or reading. So if you see a 10% gain, that is good, and it is progress, and it is what we need to get to where we need to be. But it is still a very low proficiency rate, very few students are at the level that we would like them to be to expect that they'll have success in post-secondary education and in careers. So, yes, I think we are seeing some very positive things happening. We're starting to understand better the kinds of things that need to happen, especially in underperforming schools, and those gains are evident, but it is something that we need to keep progressing on because we have not yet arrived.
To participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Edward, when I read those words, what came to mind for you? And is that indeed what happened, and is it still happening? Are we closing gaps?
Yeah, I appreciate Adan's comments on if you move from 0 to 10, that's significant, right? So we're still definitely not where we need to be with our state's majority-minority student population. I'd be interested to see how they made those calculations. There's a lot of things you can do to inflate numbers, and those numbers don't quite add up to me, but I'd be interested in seeing their calculations. One thing to note is while it'd be nice to attribute any sort of gains to, some current things that are going on, we tend to have a pretty short-term memory in education. Last year's 12th graders, the graduating class from 2014, was also the first group of students to go through full-day compulsory kindergarten within our state. Prior to that class, full-day kindergarten was not mandated. And so, there's maybe a call for early childhood preparation as well that could have an impact on these scores.
So you're saying if we went back and looked at this group of kids, we'd see that they had some advantages that classes before them didn't have because of programs that were instituted?
Correct. And the key advantage would be that they had a full-day kindergarten, compulsory full-day kindergarten.
Well, Governor Martinez and the Public Education Department say that these gains are because New Mexico education policy and spending has targeted specific areas to improve student performance, a focus on preparing all children to read at grade level, and the introduction of accountability measures requiring students to demonstrate an understanding of core subjects before graduating. And Adan, with you being in the schools there, does that make sense to you? And I'm curious whether you've seen how these numbers have been arrived at.
I couldn't say a whole lot about what is happening statewide, I'd have to take some time to analyze the statewide numbers and where they came from. As Edward mentioned, but we are seeing some of those gains within our own district, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, district by district, how these reforms are being handled. Some schools and some school leaders, they kind of roll with the things that they have control over, and schools still have a lot of autonomy in the kinds of things that they do within the boundaries of their own school or school district. So I think that's a piece of it. As far as the targeted reforms, I've seen a little bit of a mixed bag. I mean, I've seen some programs that are very effective in some places. I personally have experience with a program called K3 Plus that I saw a great benefit from, but not all districts qualify for it. You qualify for it based on proficiency of students and poverty levels. In my current district, I don't qualify for it, but I've qualified for it before in other places, and I've seen it work very effectively. Other targeted reform initiatives, I haven't seen as much benefit from. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think there is a single answer to that question of whether targeted, what they call below-the-line funding initiatives are any better than above-the-line, fund the district and let them decide kind of reform initiatives. But I have seen success from some and not as much from others.
Well, let me ask you, and Edward, I'll ask you too, at whom are the reforms targeted? And you talked about K3 Plus, but what are some of those other reforms? So, Edward, at whom are reforms targeted? Are they reforms that are throughout the state? We say targeted. Obviously, they're targeted at something or mm-hmm. someone.
Yeah, it's been interesting to try to gain an understanding of what the current administration is attempting to do with targeting some of these programs, or even using the term targeting. Under No Child Left Behind, which was enacted in 2002 and is the current law of the land still, even though it's been expired for almost as many years as it was in existence, it's still the law of the land. Schools were – states and local education agencies – were asked to look at specific subgroups, look at each of their the data in subgroups. So you look at Hispanic students, you look at boys versus girls, you look at Native American or English language learner students, special education students, and so on. And schools were held accountable for the results of each of those subgroups. We have New Mexico is one of many states, over 40, who's received a waiver to that law by the Obama administration. And there were some requirements put in place by that waiver that we would adopt career and college readiness standards, the Common Core, that we would align our state assessment to those standards, so the PARC assessment that everybody's hearing about in the news lately, that we would align teacher evaluation practices to those assessments, that those assessments would play a role. So 50% of standardized tests play a role in teacher evaluation. And then the last piece is that we would target our efforts on the bottom quartile of schools and students. And so that's something that the administration here in the state has taken and honed in on. The unfortunate piece is that when you hone in just in general on that bottom quartile of performers, you're no longer looking at those other subgroups. And so those subgroups have been, for lack of a better term, swept under the carpet in some districts where you might have a very high-performing district, a district like Los Alamos, say, very high-performing. And if there's not accountability, then to focus in on the limited number of English language learners or Hispanic or Native American students in those districts, they can essentially be swept under the carpet when you're only looking just in general at the bottom quartile of kids.
All right. We're talking today about the impact of public education reforms here in New Mexico. I'm joined by Edward Tabat Cubero, Deputy Director of Dual Language Education of New Mexico, and by Pauake Valley School Superintendent Adan Delgado, who joined us by phone. You can join our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or call our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. We'll be back with you after this short break.
Attend the 18th annual Einstein Gala, New Mexico's biggest science party of the year, on Saturday, March 21st at 5:30 p.m. at the Sheraton Uptown. The National Museum of Nuclear Science and History proudly hosts this prestigious black tie event that features thrilling science experiments, local entertainment, and dinner with a silent auction. For tickets and complete details, visit nuclearmuseum.org. A message from the tax-exempt National Museum of Nuclear Science and History.
Fond of This American Life? Would you like to meet Ira Glass in person? Yes, he's coming to Popejoy Hall on Sunday, March 8th for Reinventing Radio. But as a KUNM fundraiser, he's also meeting with 75 listeners in a private catered reception for an hour before the show. Tickets to attend the reception and get great seats at the show are $100. To reserve yours, send an email to ira@kunm.org. Again, send an email to ira@kunm.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking today about the impact of public education reforms. I'm joined again by Adan Delgado, Pauake Valley School Superintendent, and by Edward Tabat Cubero, Deputy Director of Dual Language Education, New Mexico. We certainly welcome you joining our conversation. Let's bring in Carmen from Bernalillo. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a question. Thinking about the third grade reading competency, I'm a little bit concerned about not passing the students. I do believe that third graders should be at third grade reading level, but I'm concerned about the research behind this and wondered if your speakers have some insight into this. I'm worried about whether this study that might be pushing this type of policy is really grounded in a proper view of how we can get to reading proficiency, and if they have any thoughts around that. And tied to that is also a New Mexico's permanent fund. And we're as New Mexico, we have the third largest permanent fund within the nation. And I know there's been resistance to potentially tap into that. But when I think about helping reading proficiency for third graders, we've got to talk about zero to third grade and the pre-K that needs to be created. So I wondered if your speakers could think about, are there other creative solutions locally that we can use to help children from when they're born all the way up to getting them ready to go into kindergarten? Because we can't start with reading in kindergarten. It's got to start before them. So I'd like some thoughts on that.
All right.
Thank you.
And Carmen, you know, we've heard a lot about using that permanent fund for pre-K, for preschool programs, but have you heard legislators or others saying, hey, let's open it up to use it for intensive reading help for children? Have you heard that?
You know, Senator Udall had just visited the House last week to talk about opening that permanent fund up to early childhood. And so I think that and there weren't specifics at that time, but that's what I'm hoping is to talk about things that we can do within schools with parent engagement around this and other creative solutions with nonprofit organizations that work with community organizations at the grassroots grassroots level, because all of us need to be invested. Because it's also, when we're talking about early childhood, it also has to be about child care for working mothers in particular, and making sure that they have a place to take their children to so that they can work, so that they can continue to have their children at school. So it's all related. It's not just education. I think this is also about child care. This is about helping women secure good jobs. It's about health care. So I think it's comprehensive, and that's what I'm hoping by looking at this early childhood, that we'll be comprehensive in our approach. It's not just about reading. It's about supporting the family to be able to help that child reach their fullest potential.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Carmen. And before I get to both of you, let's just give a little foundation here and talk about the two pieces of legislation that are up at the Capitol. Just briefly, House Bill 41, which has passed the House and is now on to the Senate. That is Representative Monica Youngblood's bill, calls for retaining third graders who are not reading proficiently and giving them intensive remediation. So this is some of what we're talking about. There is a similar Senate bill, Senate Bill 66. It is Senator Kernan's bill. It is stuck in the Senate Public Affairs Committee. So that's just a little bit of background. And let's go to Adan first. There was a lot that Carmen wanted to have you comment on, and I'll let you go any way you want to begin.
All right. Well, first of all, I'd say thank you, Carmen. I mean, that I think Carmen, in a very succinct way, hit most of the key words in this whole argument or issue. She talked about a comprehensive system. She talked about support for K-3. She talked about support for parents. So, I mean, I think that when I think of these bills that are on the table, this effort to require retention at the third grade level, there are a couple of things that I think of. On one hand, I see that it. One thing I like about it is that it solidifies the will of the state. It solidifies the will of the legislature to say we want to hold a high standard for our schools. We want our students reading by third grade, including our most needy students, our most underserved students. We want all students to be proficient by third grade. The concerns that I've brought forward on these bills have to do with the support that it takes to get to that place, the support that systems will need to put together those comprehensive systems. And I don't think a lot of times we've done enough to connect with people like Carmen, who have the ideas about what it takes to get there. And the other side of the argument is funding. You know, how do we get the funding that it might need to put these comprehensive systems together? And I can hear the arguments of some people who say it is already the charge of K-12 schools, of people like me, to get those students reading by third grade. I would counter that, you know, even though that is our current charge, we may need some additional resources to get this surge of productivity out of those, especially those K-3 grades. And we may need some more innovative programs that address these comprehensive ideas that Carmen mentioned.
Well, and she spoke of, Edward, creative solutions, and now involving parents. Is that feasible? Yes? No? Is that creative enough? Please jump in on this topic.
Sure. Go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say yes. I mean, it is feasible, and it is one of the important components of how we make this happen. Go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, Carmen brought up so many issues, and I hope we can loop back around to a few of them. Part of what I think she's getting to is really identifying New Mexico solutions for a New Mexico issue with this notion of grassroots. I'd like to go back to her very first point, which was around the research, and I would ask Representative Youngblood, Senator Kernan, Governor Martinez, what is the research that they're basing this on? I sent out a call to our national research network, a network of researchers all around the country, and they were actually only able to find one study from 1988 that was based on 54 students that has led to this policy of third grade retention. One study, 1988, based on 54 students, that all of this policy around the country is being based on. That was the one peer-reviewed study in the Journal of the American Psychological Association.
You know, and I'm curious because, you know, I found another study, and I don't know whether it's peer-reviewed at this point or not, mm-hmm. but it's a Manhattan Institute study from 2013 yeah. that looked at Florida, okay, and found and said initially there is some gain. There's some mm-hmm. early gain after a few years, and then perhaps something else happens. But mm-hmm. but I think a lot of people are sort of hanging their hat on that. I found that study on Compete New Mexico mm-hmm. site. So just to bring that up.
Sure. And so if we look at the research, there's you know, over four decades of research that shows the negative effects that retention actually has on students. Of course, we want all students reading. We want them all reading at grade level, in every grade level, beginning in kinder. And that's going to take some intensive intervention. It's going to take early childhood education. It's going to take identifying what are the assets we have here in New Mexico to build upon, rather than constantly being beat over the head with this deficit narrative about what our kids can't do or what our families don't want to do and those sorts of things. There are some assets we can build upon. But when you look at the research, It kind of makes sense, really, in Florida that if you take all of the third graders who didn't pass the test and you retain them, then you can promote the heck out of the next year's fourth grade numbers because the kids that wouldn't have passed the test are still sitting in third grade. Even with those kids who were retained, if you track them over time, what most research has shown with all kids who are retained is you might see some positive effects, but for a very limited amount of time, and eventually they wear off. And students who are retained are much more likely to drop out. The other issue that's come up, this happened in North Carolina, Chicago Public Schools, who had similar initiatives and had to reverse course, is that there's a disproportionate impact on students of color. In New Mexico, 76% of our student population is either a cultural or ethnic or linguistic minority student. So we're obviously a minority-majority student population. And this retention would have definitely a very disproportionate impact on our Hispanic students, our Hispanic males specifically, on our Native American, African American students, as compared to their white peers.
And Adan, one thing that Edward mentioned was New Mexico solutions for New Mexico issues. What is that? I mean, does that make sense to you? I mean, are we seeing something other than that, or talk to me a little bit about that, because that sort of rang home for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Edward pointed out some important points. One is that, even when you look at research, I mean, I think you need to consider this, that you know, what works in one place may not work in other areas. I mean, we don't want to come from a place that there are no solutions because we're so unique. I mean, there are solutions, and we can learn from the research, but a lot of the reforms that I think are being put forward, they aren't very you know, customized to New Mexico. I think some of that can happen at the local level as far as how the reforms are implemented. But I mean, if you consider just as I mentioned before, I worked on a school out on the reservation, the Navajo Reservation. If you look at the types of challenges, the types of needs that the students have there, is very different than other places in the country, other places even within the state. So I think that a good program would focus on the very unique needs of an individual school or an individual district.
All right. We're going to go to an email comment in a minute, but I want to encourage you to say that that's a great way to participate in our program. You can email us at callinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Let's read this email comment from David. He says he's a 28-year veteran educator in Albuquerque, most of those years as a dual language educator. He asks, how would you include teachers in discussions of reforms? How would you address poverty through education reforms? And finally, since many children in New Mexico take the standardized tests in their second language, English, what would you do to obtain optimal test results without testing them both in English and a second language? And so let's begin with you, Edward. There are a few questions there, please.
Sure. I think there are, you know, several teachers that that have solutions and really being able to hone in on those. Unfortunately, they're really swimming against the stream of our current accountability system, which does not encourage them really to follow the research-based best practices. We have such a tremendous asset. He brought up language here in New Mexico. And New Mexico is known for investing in our natural resources, our gas, oil, those sorts of things. We have this tremendous natural resource of language diversity here in New Mexico that really could have us really taking the lead in a 21st century economy. 36% of our households in New Mexico report speaking a language other than English at home. That's an asset to be invested in. But when you have an accountability system that punishes students for not being able to read at grade level in their second language in English, and then punishes their teachers for maybe being proficient in another language but not in English, that simply serves as a motivation for schools to teach that second language out of the students in favor of English only, which is unfortunate. What we really should be doing is investing in that asset so that kids can learn how to read and write and do math and think critically in their native language as they learn English as a second language, so that they come out proficient, academically proficient in multiple languages. I think that oftentimes, teachers do want accountability. They want to be held accountable. They have a sense of efficacy with their work, and they've been excluded from the conversation of reform because we've had all of you mentioned the Foundation for Excellence in Education, ALEC, other agencies from outside of New Mexico have come and really shoved these reform efforts down our throats without any voice whatsoever from our local stakeholders.
All right. And Adan, you want to go ahead and answer and start with how would you include teachers in discussions of reforms? And I guess is PED, Public Education Department, interested in including teachers in discussion of reforms?
I think that school districts and schools are relied upon to be a lot of the interface between PED and the teachers. I know that almost all of my family are teachers. My wife is a teacher. She is the place I go to for my most important consultation on things that are going on in education. She's a second grade teacher. She teaches in a high poverty and in an area that is highly affected by other languages, both Spanish and Navajo. So the comments that Edward made about dual language, they're absolutely critical to this entire conversation. Some of the best professional development that I've received has come from the Dual Language Institute and the organization that Edward works for. And the place that they come from is that asset-based model where we take advantage and use the skills that students have when they come to our classrooms, and we take advantage of that second language and not use it as a treat it as a deficiency. So the best way to include teachers is to have conversations with them, to set up the right climate so that you can have those conversations. I know in our district, one thing that we've done is we've gone to, instead of having really large in services where we kind of give information out, it's one direction. We've broken it up into smaller meetings where we have many smaller meetings and get to have a true dialogue with teachers and talk to them about what they're experiencing in the classroom, what they're working through with the new teacher evaluation system and other issues that they face. So I mean, it really isn't anything. There's no magic in it. It's just a matter of getting down and doing the hard work and investing in setting up the times and places and climate so that you can have those conversations with teachers.
All right, let's get to some callers, Adan. We've got full phone lines. Before we do, I do want to mention that we did ask the Public Education Department to participate in this discussion today. They were unable to do so, they said, because of the demands of the legislative session. But that is a perspective we would have loved to have had on this panel. It's not with us today. But Charlotte from Santa Fe is with us today. And as briefly as you can, Charlotte, we got a lot of people who would like to speak to this issue. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just have two comments. One, we're in the Santa Fe School District. My son is at El Camino Real in the dual language program. This is a school that has over 750 students. It's running two schools, a track for dual language and a track for English learners. It's too much. They have no focus. The second point is that that school is testing, you know, my son is in first grade, testing children in English when they're learning Spanish first. It goes 80-10, 80-20 as the years go on. And it's such a value. I drive from the middle of town to go south where the only dual language schools are, just so my son can be biliterate. And I think that the emphasis on biliteracy is sorely missed in schools.
All right, Charlotte, thanks so much for your comments today. A quick comment from you, Edward?
Sure, and I appreciate the comment, Charlotte. And I just want to point out that it's not about not learning English. Our students have to learn English, then they have to be proficient in reading in English. The issue is, why would they have to sacrifice their native language as well, and why can't students such as Charlotte's child gain proficiency in both languages? That's a huge asset we have. And I guess the question I would have in response to that is, what would our state accountability system look like if we actually valued and invested in that asset? I think the way that we hold schools and students accountable may look a little bit different if we were to bring our system into a 21st century system that acknowledges that we're living in a much flatter world with people that are much more connected across ethnic groups, across languages, and so on, and we need to prepare students for that diversity.
We're talking about the impacts of public education reforms in New Mexico. I'm joined by Edward Tabat Cubero, whom you just heard speak, Deputy Director of Dual Language Education of New Mexico, and also joining us is Pauaca Valley School Superintendent Adan Delgado, who joins us by telephone. You can join on our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866. We'll be back with your calls after this brief break.
Saturday night, March 7th at Pope Joy Hall, the New Mexico Philharmonic joins forces with the New Mexico Ballet Company for Aram Khachaturian's award-winning ballet, Spartacus. Grant Cooper conducts the NM Phil in this favorite of the renowned Bolshoi Ballet Theater. Follow the passionate exploits of Spartacus leading the slave revolt against the Romans in this fully staged spectacular. Parental guidance advised, info at nmphil.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Philharmonic. Do you appreciate folk art from around the world? Then watch your mail for several chances to win beautiful textiles donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market. If you've never donated to KUNM before, you won't receive a mailing, but you can still donate and register for 13 chances to win at KUNM.org. Click Support KUNM at the top of the homepage, return your mailing, or go online today, because the first three winners will be drawn before the Spring Pledge Drive.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and you can join in our discussion. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or on Twitter at KUNM News. And we're talking today about the impact of public education reforms here in New Mexico. Let's bring in Mike from Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having the show. I have just this real simple and quick question. This whole business about retaining students, basically flunking them, third graders that don't pass this standardized test. Now, I believe it's computer-driven, and that's a whole other set of issues that need to be discussed. But how many students are we talking about? I mean, they've been giving these tests to third graders, you know, for like a week. But they've been giving them to students for years. Surely we know how many students we're actually talking about being retained. I have a friend who teaches in one of the poor schools, elementary schools. He tells me that it's probably about half the third graders.
Well, let's find out from our panel, and thanks so much for calling and asking that question, Mike. And Edward, you had some numbers?
Sure. So based on last year's numbers from our state test, over 25,000 third graders were tested. And you're right, Mike, nearly half of them scored not proficient on the assessment. The way the current legislation reads, though, is our assessment system, the scores are broken down into a couple of different levels. There's beginning step, there's nearing proficient, proficient, and advanced. And so the bill actually would impact only those students who are in the beginning steps with the lowest quadrant of scores. And that last year was 24% of students, which is just over 6,000 third graders that would have to be retained based on the current proposals.
And I think I read that we have about 26,000 third graders statewide. Okay. Don, do you have any figures for your district? I heard some figures for a district, but if you have any for your particular district, that might be of interest to Mike as well.
Well, I think we would probably be, if we were to take a snapshot right now, we'd probably be looking at 30% of our students falling into the category that would be up for consideration for retention. The thing I think is important to point out in this legislation is that it doesn't happen immediately. There is a 2 or 3 year rollout. So the intention is there. The intention is there that we get schools to kind of beef up their programs. There is some language in there that requires some extra intervention with those students. It requires intervention in the form of typically what intervention means is smaller instructional sizes, small group instruction, and or more time. So the theory is that if those interventions were implemented, you wouldn't have as many students getting to the point where they had where they were retained. There are also some exemptions for students with special considerations, like special education and language influences. So, we can give statistics for what it would be if it were an immediate snapshot. But the theory behind the bills is that we would increase our efforts before they get to third grade and have fewer students that are not proficient by the time they get to third grade.
Well, and I'm wondering, Superintendent Delgado, are you in favor of this legislation?
So in its current form, I believe that we need some more resources if we're going to pull this off. I do believe in the idea that we need to raise our expectations, especially for our underserved students, students who go to schools who have very low proficiency rates. And the problem is that these statistics aren't just for reading. If you follow those same students throughout their lives, you're going to see the same kinds of statistics that will follow them. You'll see low graduation rates. You'll see low success rates at college. You'll see lower earning rates. You'll see lower even gets into health implications later in life with lower literacy rates. So I, in concept, I believe in the idea that we need to raise the standards for our students in the state as far as reading. The question is how to get there, and I don't know that a mandatory retention is gonna get to where we need to get. I don't even like the idea that this whole thing is pushed as retention or as flunking students. I think that's the wrong approach to take in general. The focus of the bill and the effort should be more around increasing literacy, increasing reading proficiency. We have some creative programs that are blended classrooms where you don't have the same kinds of distinctions between grade levels that we currently have. So the whole idea of retention and flunking students is kind of a backwards way of looking at it, I think. We should be more focused on the methods and the kinds of comprehensive programs that what Carmen mentioned earlier on what we need to do to get those literacy rates up.
Right, and using the permanent fund to create those programs. But flunking and retention are good sound bites, and we live in that world these days. Let's go ahead and bring in Court from Albuquerque. Good morning, Court.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
A couple of things I'd like to take issue with in terms of how this program's presented is that education reform, as it's being implemented across the country, has nothing to do with reforming education. These are corporate enterprises, and they're about privatizing education, reducing teacher salaries, dismantling union. That's the only thing they're about, including the third grade retention issue. There's no good intentions with this at all. It's all about privatizing education. The second point I'd like to bring up is that panels like this, discussions like this, whenever they occur, wherever they happen, rarely include actual teachers. And I'm just wondering why that never seems to happen. It doesn't happen on this program. It doesn't happen on KNME. It doesn't happen on other New Mexico programs where teachers actually have their voice. With all due respect to the superintendent, he is in a political position.
All right, and let's
and he has to tread softly and carry a little stick or however he approaches it. I agree mostly with what he says, but he's limited in what he can say. Now, a real teacher who is actually teaching students on a daily basis can say, no, this is the situation.
And, Court, let me stop you there, because I do want to remind you, and you can go back and look in our archives, that we have had programs where we did have teachers on, and they were very thoughtful teachers who we had on. And a part of an issue here is scheduling. We're at a timing when a lot of teachers cannot participate. And today's program is about examining policies and the effects on New Mexico students as a whole. But I will encourage you to go back and listen. I know there was a specific program in the summer when teachers were available, and I will encourage you to go back and listen to that. And thank you for pointing out what you see as corporate enterprises taking over this whole endeavor. And Don, let me start with you, because Court sees it as only corporate enterprise and not about education reform in any way. Is there a trickle down where that shifts, or what? Tell me your reaction to what he had to say, please.
I don't know. I mean, judging the motives behind things are that's hard to do. I mean, I do see that we're spending a lot of money with corporations. I mean, I can see an eventuality where you know, reforms in public education are labeled as a failure, and you know that the alternative is to privatize. You know, I can see that as being a potential motive. I try not to go there too much, because you know it distracts from the work here in my own district with my own students. You know, so I don't know that I want to say a whole lot about those deeper motives.
You know, a lot of people go there often, though. Even outside of my daughter's elementary school yesterday, were parents handing out literature about the park tests. And a lot of that information and a lot of the protests we've been seeing up in Santa Fe are about this corporatization and the corporate profits that are being made. Let's go ahead, Edward. Do you want to comment a little bit about what Court had to say?
Sure. First, I appreciate Court's comments. I am a teacher. I teach at UNM, and I also have spent most of my career teaching, and my job right now is working directly to support teachers in their instruction. I mean, there's so much behind what he's talking about with the corporate interests. Public education, which is really the cornerstone of our democracy, is also kind of one of those last untapped places where folks can vote for the free market, essentially. And so some folks, you know, may think there's a conspiracy against public education, that we'd want to see it fail and privatize. I can say I have seen evidence of lots of money being made by certain corporations who are responsible for writing these tests. We know that there are some folks in the technology sector who have pushed the Common Core standards, and then who have turned around and made money off of those things. I walk through schools every day where I see new purchases of carts upon carts of laptops that are only used for testing, those sorts of things, you know, happening. And I do want to say that we are at an interesting point in our society around what type of knowledge we value and how we value students demonstrating it. You know, there is a big push by some folks here in the state around alternative demonstrations of competency. There's more than one way to show that you're competent or proficient at something, definitely more than a test, paper, pencil, or on the computer. My daughter attends Health Leadership High School, and she spent the last, this entire week, actually, she put together projects collaborating with teammates within her school, and has spent this whole week presenting to professionals in the healthcare field. So they were giving a problem. They were given a student profile, essentially, who they were supposed to help. And so, you know, this made-up student, they're supposed to help navigate the healthcare system, social work, you know, food, all of these sorts of things. And then yesterday she presented to a panel of social workers her learning from that. So she was thinking critically. She was collaborating. She was applying the information that she learned. She was reading, writing, presenting, and then graded by professionals in the field. So I just have to say there's more than one way to demonstrate competency.
And what school? What school is she at?
That's Health Leadership High School. It's a charter school here in town.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Lillian from Albuquerque. Good morning, Lillian.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Well, and you today?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited to hear this conversation on the radio this morning.
Good, good.
And I come from a background of early childhood education, which I think is a big topic in the education reform. And the point that I wanted to make, kind of tying back to your conversation earlier about bilingualism in education, is that that's one of the first questions I always get when I have a new family that I'm visiting, is am I doing right in teaching my children Spanish, and how will this affect them later on in school? So I just kind of wanted to bring that up again and see what everyone else had to say about that.
All right, Lillian, thanks so much for calling the program and for listening today. And Edward, you'd like to comment?
Sure. I would like to point out for us that there's a big difference between content knowledge and ability and language. And so knowing how to read, write, do math, think critically, and all of those, irrespective of language. So, you know, I know how to read and write and do math, but if you send me to France, I don't know the language. I don't know the French language to show that I'm proficient, to demonstrate my proficiency in reading, writing, and mathematics, and so on. And that's kind of the foundation behind this notion of bilingual education, that let's teach students in the language that they comprehend best so they can learn those skills of reading, writing, math, critical thinking, and so on, as they acquire the English language, so that they can then demonstrate those skills in English as well without having to sacrifice their native language. So it's kind of a win-win. It's interesting that we have the demographics in New Mexico to do that between our indigenous language, our languages, our Spanish-speaking population. Our state constitution actually calls for the preparation of a bilingual teaching force who's prepared to serve these students. And yet we have states like Utah, who definitely does not have the diversity of New Mexico, taking the lead in these types of dual language initiatives in the country, which is just making them that much more competitive than us in the marketplace.
And I want to just briefly revisit the subject of having teachers on the show. We did discuss teacher evaluations with teachers in July. They were great. Visit KUNM.org and check out the post for today's show to find a link to that program. I also want to read a quick email comment from Katie. She worries about the effects on special education students and teachers. The public education department is losing these teachers because they feel the evaluation system is unfair to them. Katie, I would just want to say I was reading the text of the governor's State of the State this morning, and she specifically mentioned special education teachers and wanting to get them and retain them. So that's something to keep her to there. So we're coming to the close of our program. And as I always say to people, we get to a lot, but there are things sometimes we don't get to. And so Don Delgado, superintendent of Pauake Valley Schools, let me start with you and just give you an opportunity to talk about where you think we are and where you think we need to go to make sure that we are taking care of our students in our public schools here in New Mexico.
Well, so I'd say that probably the most important thing is that we keep sight of the fact that in especially in K-12 education, our focus has to be how we get to the place where we were our best serving our students, and that is the end. The means to get to that end are, you know, good relations with our teachers. It's hearing their voices and being inclusive of them. It's hearing the feedback from them on what they're experiencing in the classroom and how we can make it better. But we cannot lose sight of the fact that we, as Edward has pointed out, we're in a very unique situation in this state. If there's any state in the country that should be able to get this together as far as serving especially our students that have backgrounds from other languages, it should be here. It's written right into our Constitution. And that's going to take some more work. It's going to take some more effort in figuring out how to do that and assuring that it's happening. But it should not be acceptable in this that we have the kind of achievement gap that we have for our minority students and our low-income students.
And Adon Delgado, thank you for that. And Edward, we're closing now. Anything you want to ask people to keep their eye on during this legislative session?
Sure. Representative Javier Martinez's House Bill 373. That's also Senator Bill Soule's Senate Bill 470 that would invest in teachers to be able to have the necessary skills to serve these students. And again, we're just looking at New Mexico solutions for New Mexico issues. And I'd also really strongly recommend tapping that land grant permanent fund for early childhood education.
All right. Thanks to our guests, Dual Language Education of New Mexico Deputy Director Edward Tabat Cubero and Pewaukee Valley School Superintendent Adan Delgado. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. Jefferson White engineered the show today. Kaveh Movahed handled our phones. Elaine Baumgartel produced the show, and she's also our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This is the KUNM call-in show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.